Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome to Access Talk with Trish, a 30-minute weekly online radio segment dedicated to examining the good, the bad, and the reality of accessibility in our communities. And I'm your host for the show, Trish Kravishaw, disability inclusion coach, author, facilitator, and motivational speaker. A woman with a disability, but definitely not a disabled woman. If you know me, you understand. The Access Talk with Trish radio show can be heard live on Wednesdays at 11:30 Eastern at accesstalkwithtrish.com, or you can listen to past show recordings on demand at any time at the same address or on iTunes if that's how you roll. This show is brought to you by Changing Paces, an accessibility consulting firm that simplifies disability legislation for organizations that think they don't have the time or money for compliance. Visit changingfaces.com and nurture a culture of inclusion where everyone matters. On that note, I'd like to introduce you to my guest for this week, Janice McGurran. Janice has both private and public sector experience in the government and hydro sectors and in human resources at an Ontario provincial operational enterprise. She's worked in the charitable sector as well as teaching part-time for York University / Seneca College in the Human Resources and Fire Services program. Her background also includes diverse committee experience, WSIB, Local Hospital Board, POA, IAPA, I'll let her explain those to us, and AODA, Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. Janice has been responsible for a decrease in human rights complaints, conducting investigations and preparing reports and recommendations. The cases she's handled have included sensitive employee relations and human rights issues and have demonstrated the use of conflict resolution and mediation skills at bargaining and grievance sessions. Having designed and implemented successful human rights / anti-bullying programs, Janice has delivered numerous leadership training sessions. As well, she has significant experience dealing with modified work and accommodation issues and hiring staff to work with vulnerable clients. She has extensive knowledge of the human resources function across complex groups and a passion for role modeling leadership and productivity and developing talent. Janice's interests include, not surprisingly, human rights issues on a light and a large scale, family, of course, some volunteer work, caring for rescue animals, I want to hear about that, and most importantly, hockey. She still plays mini sticks with her grandson, apparently. Welcome, Janice. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, good morning, Chris, and thank you so much for offering me this opportunity to be with you this morning.
We have a similar passion, my dear. Human rights in general. Mine in particular, I'm fascinated by global human rights. So I get all these Google alerts about global, I'm fascinated by what goes on in other countries because, you know, with the internet, we're such a small planet, really, you know, and we're just pockets of people. That's all we are. So tell me, Janice, how did your interest in human rights get started?
When I look back on my career and see how this developed, I think it at that time was a natural part of human resources. And really, there was a new field in terms of human rights. The legislation has been around for a long time, but many companies didn't really know what to do with it. They always would say, yes, we are in compliance with the law, but when they weren't in compliance or when people complained, they didn't really know what to do with it. So I think it was a natural handover to the human resources department and a cry for help, if you will.
Right. I hear you. So you just responded. You were responding to a need.
Well, actually a little more than responding, because as a human resources practitioner, one thing I would say about myself is I'm not a very good desk person. I like to go for walkabouts, and anyone who's seen me in the workplace knows that I'm all over the place. So, you know, from top to bottom every day, I'm always out there, and I always had a philosophy that your human resources function should be visible so they know who you are and what you do, and let's use that word sincerely, approachable. But also being out there and establishing that climate would allow you to see things that people may not report. So you see them on your own, whether it was walking by people who were saying inappropriate things, or you saw people being treated inappropriately. So I wouldn't say that the whole piece was totally reactive. There's a lot of proactive things that human resources, or, you know, that I would have done as well.
Right, right, right. Critical distinction. Thank you for pointing that out. So this is how I gauge the trends. I go back to my Google alerts. I can tell you that the Google alerts that I have set up for human rights and disability related issues, once upon a time it was maybe two or three times a week I would get some kind of Google announcement or alert to an article that's recently been published. But now it's more like two or three times a day. It's actually getting to be quite a volume for me. So this tells me that the human rights issues are coming to the forefront a lot more fluidly than they might have at one point, or maybe the incidence of them hitting the news, or the incidence of them actually people filing human rights complaints. What do you think, Janice? Do you think people are becoming more aware, or people drawing on the services of human rights more often? What do you think?
I think there's a combination of things happening here, Trish. If I look back over the years, many years ago, the complaints we would see had a pattern, and the pattern would change whether it was human rights or disability or men versus women. The pattern has changed, but also I think in the human resources profession, we have been responsible for better and better policies that put companies in compliance with human rights legislation. And what I specifically mean here is drawing attention to what I said earlier, with human resources being out there. Not only does the person have to be out there, the policy has to be out there. Mm-hmm. And a well-written human rights policy that says company is in compliance with all human rights legislation. And by human rights, I mean the whole gamut, whether you're talking accommodation, harassment, discrimination. One important aspect that I'm pleased to see more and more is the fact that the policies are better written. There is no fear of retaliation, and that has got to be an integral part of any policy that allows people to come forward without any fear of retaliation. Or, right. I mean, years ago, I would have people say, can I meet you off site? They were so scared to sort of be seen.
Right.
Well, can you put in this complaint without telling anybody it's me? Well,
right. This
is the pattern that we've seen. But with improvement both in the law and the application of the law, and seeing through the media some successful applications in the workplace, I think that has accounted for more openness in the workplace.
Awesome. the more transparent we can be, the more open and more trusting people can be. Such a huge issue with regards to disclosure. I know when I was working, my critical issue for the longest period of time was my depression. And, you know, when you have depression, I'll tell you, how often did you get people calling in sick saying, "I'm calling in because I'm depressed"?
Yeah.
It didn't happen, you know.
Yeah.
So those of us living with mental health, we instead would call in and provide some non-stigmatized reason for not coming into work today. But of course, that long-term, you know, for a long-term employee, and maybe that's once a month or whatever that ends up being for that particular employee, the supervisor inevitably begins to suspect that they're not telling the truth. Right. And this is seeds to a not healthy relationship between an employee and their supervisor. And then there's the, even when there's an awareness around maybe I should disclose, how do I bring myself to sit down and say, you know, I've been lying to you for the last 3 years. What do you think?
Well, a couple of aspects there, Trish. First of all, one of the things that I believe heartens me is the fact that I believe human resources is doing a better job of training management so that, and how do you deal with illness? And I say illness, I don't mean physical, mental, I say illness. So we have training programs, or we should, and human resources, I hold them responsible for training management, how to deal with people who phone in and say they're sick.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. And quite frankly, I do think there has been a lot of work done to really, in my mind, reduce the stigma that we used to associate with mental illness. And we talked about two things, whether it's being temporary or accommodation. So I think we have come a long way. And it also heartens me to see that people who are having some of the issues as well are being treated by people who are helping them to see, in many cases, this is a part of life. Everybody has an element of this in their life, and how to go about, you know, maintaining yourself in the workplace and dealing with this openly and honestly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hear you. And because that open and honest dialogue only provides, it provides the foundation for, you know, a future relationship with the, you know, with this employee and the employee and supervisor that has the ability to help that employee reach their potential. But if the open dialogue isn't there, the employee is going to be hesitant to even think about disclosing so that they can get the accommodations they need to be able to maximize their capacity at work.
I think one of the best questions that a manager supervisor can ask is, what do you need from me to be successful here at work? How can I help you?
Beautiful, beautiful.
It's very simple. You know, management is not rocket science. Maybe good management is. But I have the philosophy that we all want to see people succeed. And if we work together as a team, however big or small our department is, then we're only as successful as everybody on that team.
Right.
And good teams pull together. We help each other. And again, if there's anyone, you know, you have a department with 10 people, if there's anyone in that department who has never had a death in the family or a pet death or some emergency, that would be very surprising. Everybody, as I like to say, has a life story.
Yeah.
And if you can just empathize with our coworkers, we can make it work.
Yeah, every one of us is vulnerable to crisis, irrelevant of what it is. And we need the support of people around us to help us get through.
For sure.
For sure. I've been picking up on stirrings around where the growth of human resources will be evolving over the next decade or so. I hear this, that this evolution is, it's a response, not a reaction, but a response to how we communicate these days, and a response to how we process and what our motivations are. Do you have any feeling about that, Janice?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that question. If you look at it, human resources itself is a relatively new function. Years ago, they used to call it personnel. And if you ask somebody what personnel did, they'd hire and fire. That's all they
right.
did.
Exactly.
They changed their name to human resources. And quite frankly, for many years, and I'm going to say well into the 90s, Trish,
mm-hmm.
many people didn't know how to use their human resources, that there were a lot of professional people there that could help the business grow.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, human resources has been an integral part of the success of a business, and you'll find the human resource people in good businesses are at the executive table, and they're doing a lot more than hiring.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the difference they bring to the executive table is they have a different perspective. And so they contribute to the bottom line from their perspective, and they can offer something that no one else can.
Mm-hmm.
And we need people who, you know, are good at some of the transactional stuff. You have transactional and consultative things, like where you get paid or where you do the paperwork. That's being more and more automated and in many cases outsourced. An example is payroll. But the consultative piece is where I see action in the future. And that's a double-edged sword. It will require human resource professionals to be excellent at that ability to tap into their company and how they can contribute, but also for the executives to use human resources in that way. And just don't call them when you have a problem.
Mm-hmm,
they're part of executive management. And the forward-thinking companies use their human resources that way. So I see an increase in consultation at the senior level.
Very good. Very good. I'm glad to hear that. What I'm hearing and what I'm picking up is that there is going to be more and more need for emotional intelligence in the HR industry. Is there currently any presence of emotional intelligence training in an HR typical program?
I don't know that they call it emotional intelligence. There are some facets where that is touched on. And where that came from is looking at where does human resources fit in an organization? And I think many years ago, and again, depending on your human resources professional, whatever the executive said, they just made it happen. Well, I want you to fire so-and-so. Well, reorganize this department. There was not a lot of thought given. And in many mm-hmm. cases, the human resources professional just did whatever they were asked.
Right.
Now, when we train people and talk about what you're going to find in the real world, it's this ability to bring in the emotional intelligence and help market that aspect to senior executives so they can see that an organization that's peopled with very positive people who understand emotional intelligence is going to be better for the bottom line, whether you're a charity, a government, a private enterprise, and you will be a company that you'll be a company of choice. People will want to come and work there if you mm-hmm. have a reputation for behaving with emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I completely, I'm completely with you there. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about this. We're also going to talk about your work in conflict resolution and mediation.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Devon has been with his company for over 5 years, since before his legs started giving him trouble. He loves his job, he's great at it, and he plans to stay with the company till retirement if possible. Problem is, it's getting difficult for him to walk from his desk to the washroom. His supervisor, Aisha, lets Devon know that she's noticed he's having some trouble. She suggests they move his desk closer to the entrance and the washroom. Devon is relieved and agrees. This is an example of a basic accommodation that helps make a workplace inclusive. Did you know that 50% of accommodations don't cost a dime and 80% cost $500 or less? The inclusion of people with disabilities in the workforce is the best answer to our current labor shortages. And making businesses accessible to customers with disabilities sees you tapping into their $32 billion spending power. Sound good? Then let a changing Paces, warm and friendly expert take you by the hand and walk you through the steps to making your business accessible to everyone. Visit us at changingpaces.com today.
And we're back. So Janice, we're pretty well in agreement here that, yeah, that emotional intelligence would be a really positive shot in the arm for any HR department, especially to be able to bring it to management, because it's about helping people to see how their decisions and their behavior impacts the company in the long run. I read a study recently that says that our decisions are actually based 35% on intellectual response and 80% on emotional response. What do you think about that?
I absolutely agree. From the word go, what happens in a workplace is very similar to what happens in our life. Mm-hmm. And so many of us are conditioned to respond emotionally, and we can't help ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to really look at what is the meaning behind your response. You know, if somebody says they want somebody fired, or we can't hire this one or that one or whatever they're saying, what's the emotional content behind that?
Mm-hmm.
We understand that. And it helps us when we are trying to resolve our differences as well.
Do people who are going through HR programs, do they get any training in disability issues?
They do now. It's whether it's through human rights, and there's a large human rights component in terms of training. So when you're talking about human resource professionals, they'll be taught about the law, but also the accommodation issues are in there. So they're talking about employers' legal duties, disclosure, best practices and accommodation how-to, and accommodation for any type of issue, learning disability, you name it. That's all part and parcel, and as well as things like harassment and discrimination,
mm-hmm.
of how people are trained. And one of the reasons for that is you look at what the human rights law says. The companies are responsible for establishing and maintaining an environment free of any form of, and you talk about harassment and discrimination. So it mm-hmm. falls on the shoulders of human resources professionals to carry that flag, if you will, in the organization, and they can't do that without proper training. The other thing I will say, however, and this is, you know, it's almost 2018, I would be wrong if I said that every organization had a human resources professional or access to one, or even used a lawyer if they didn't have one. As you know, there are many, many small businesses, and they don't have human resources. So they may do it on the fly, or they may let somebody else do it because they like to work with people. The value that a human resource professional brings, even if you want to use one on an as-needed basis, is so integral to the success of any size of a company. Some of them go to their law firms. Most of them have a law firm. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely fine as long as the law firm has an employment and labor law specialist. With all due respect, those folks are fabulous, but that's what is exactly needed. If you don't have your own HR, there are lots of options where you can employ somebody part-time or you can employ a consultant on an as-needed basis. That's absolutely fine, because the reality is that every company cannot support a human resource professional, nor
absolutely.
Do they need one with the small size or the nature of their business.
Right.
Very. However, having said that, it does not absolve them from the obligation to be compliant with all forms of the law.
Very good point. Very good point. The direction I want to go a little bit here is in terms of managing conflict. I know that you have a really broad, level of experience with conflict resolution and mediation. That's something, again, that small businesses, can they handle at a basic level? Let's give them some tips.
I think the first step, even if you don't have a human resources department, is to have a policy on how you will handle complaints. Whether you, again, you employ somebody part-time to create these policies, but everyone needs to have a policy that gives direction. What will happen if there is a dispute or a complaint? And everyone can point to that. So there's a series of steps. How to make a complaint, who to make it to, what protection you will receive as a complainant, methodology for resolution, whether it's through an outsider, whether it's through department heads, whether it's through what I call shuttle diplomacy, and that is where you've got two people in different rooms and you've got the mediator or the problem solver going back and forth between one and another, and when things are appropriate, you can finally get them in the same room. But the basis is a policy that all employees need, including executives, that gives direction. And all of this, how to handle a complaint, how to handle a dispute. And as we know, there are many dispute resolution mechanisms, but you need to have something in writing in the company that directs everybody so that everybody feels equally treated should they have a complaint.
Mm-hmm. Policy, beautiful. It's obviously the first place to start.
It is. It has to be in writing and it has to be accessible. There's no point having a policy that's on somebody's computer or it's hard to get or people don't know about it.
Stuck in a binder someplace underneath the cash machine.
Or it's you know, online somewhere, but nobody knows it's there. I've seen companies that have wonderful policies, but if you ask the employees, they haven't got a clue. That's as wrong as not having a policy.
Right.
Market your policies. Have it in writing. Market it. Make it accessible.
Market it. There's a concept.
Next thing is going to be a little maybe unsuspecting, but in terms of workplace and disability and accommodation and emotional intelligence, I'm going to say something. It's okay to shed a few tears in the workplace.
It's healthy.
There's your role model. That's okay. It's okay to show those feelings. I'm very happy today or I'm sad today.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you've got a workplace like that is open and responsible and the management is role modeling those aspects that drive the company culture, then you'll have a more successful bottom line. It stands to reason.
Fabulous. I'm really, really appreciate your feedback and your input and your guidance on this topic today, Janice.
Trish, thank you for the opportunity. It's been my pleasure chatting with you this morning.
Excellent. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today for today's episode of Access Talk with Trish. This is a 30-minute weekly online radio segment dedicated to examining the good, the bad, and the reality of accessibility in our communities. Please join us again next week on Wednesday at 11:30 a.m. This show is brought to you by Changing Paces, an accessibility consulting firm that simplifies disability legislation for organizations that think they don't have the time or money for compliance. Visit changingpaces.com and nurture a culture of inclusion where everyone matters. Till next time, take self-care seriously and God bless.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.